Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to a new Cyclone Fanatic podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Doing something a little bit different today thanks to our friends at Agrigold. Some of you might be watching online. If you are, hello. We're testing out some new technology, and we're going to keep building this thing up for the future because we want to be relevant and around in 5 years. And this is one of the ways we're doing that. So Agrigold bringing us the video feed today. It's going to get better. If you look behind us, it's kind of plain right now. We're testing some things out today, but it's going to be really cool here once we continue to build this up. So again, thanks to our friends at Agrigold. And thanks to my friend Jack Whitford for coming in today. What's up? What's up, Senator?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Thank you for taking time off the trail.
No problem.
How's life? You haven't given.
Busy.
Yeah, man, you've been all over the place.
Yeah.
I opened a Time magazine the other day, and I saw you.
Oh yeah, the article about Rubio.
Yeah, you were like in the back, like Rubio was, and you were like following him behind.
Yeah, that slowed down though. Now I'm in the middle of Senate session and a little more stable, but
that's good.
It's good.
We're gonna do a spring football preview today. That's why I've got the senator in here. Spring football, man, it's crazy. It starts tomorrow. It's Big 12 tournament week, and we're going to have our Big 12 tournament preview show tonight on KXNO from 6 to 7. But I think this is like as early as they've started spring football, which is okay. They'll take the break in the middle for spring break. But this is, Jack, I've been going through what I think the depth chart might look like, and we're recording this at about 9 o'clock on Monday morning. So they actually, I'm anticipating they release a depth chart later today, and if not on Tuesday morning. But man, this is these coaching changes are oftentimes you get confused because there's so much turnover. But this one to me has just been a whirlwind when you talk about just the Campbell staff with their activity on social media. I feel like we're seeing a lot of this, and it's almost overwhelming how much has been going on over the past couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, they're not only changing coaches, they're changing the complete style of how they operate.
Yeah.
And in both in the recruiting trail, on social media, the weight room, they're changing everything. And, it makes it a lot more interesting. But, this staff is so much different than the last staff. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
One of the things Now, I've been obsessed with, probably too much, with the social media. I killed the Rhodes staff because I didn't think they were very good at it and they didn't utilize it. The Campbell staff is absolutely doing that. And, it doesn't win you games. Like, I fully realize that, but it gets people excited.
Yeah.
And one of the ways they're doing that as well, so they're getting the young fans excited with that, but I've also noticed just little things like inviting Dan McCartney back to the coaches' clinic.
Yeah.
I heard a friend of the program, Glenn Waterhouse, he's an old Cyclone letter winner.
Yep.
He told me that the day of the spring game, they're having a brunch for former letter winners. It really seems like they're reaching out to the past of Iowa State as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, a lot of your hardcore fans and supporters and possible donors are former players. And, McCartney did a good job of that. Chizik completely dropped the ball when it came to reaching out to alumni and former players. Rhodes built some of that back up, but from what I'm hearing so far about Coach Campbell and his staff, they really want to reach out and start building a culture at Iowa State. And they come from programs like Mount Union, and that understand that culture means a lot, and having the support of former players means a lot. If they can have these guys plug back in, is it going to change the world as far as Iowa State football? No. But you need to start building tradition, and bringing those guys back is a part of that.
I like Bill Finley always says, you don't need to apologize for what you are, but be thankful for or be proud of what you are. He has Bill has some saying that he says all the time, and I feel like that's a good thing for this football program to do. Let's be honest, the history of Iowa State football is not the most tradition rich in college football or the Big 12, but the one thing that you do tie into there is pride, and I don't know if there's a more prideful or loyal fan base in the country. When you look at all the losses, and they're still filling up Jack Trice Stadium, they're still donating, people are proud of Sage Rosenfels. People are proud of what Kelechi Osemele is about to become one of the richest men in the National Football League at this point. People are proud of that. So, the pride I have as an alumni, I like tapping into that.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good.
And bringing those guys back for the spring game where they can interact with fans in more of a laid-back, spring game atmosphere, if Sage Rosenfels comes back for that or Ellis Hobbs or Seneca Wallace or these guys that haven't been around in a while, that's important, and hopefully that happens.
What's your overall opinion been of Matt Campbell, just what you've seen so far? Is there anything that stands out to you? And you're fairly familiar with him because you've seen his team the last couple of years.
Yeah,
as well.
I really like the energy he's bringing to the program. And, you know, you talked about social media a few minutes ago. No, it doesn't win you games. And it is a double-edged sword because you can use it for certain tools as far as getting fans excited and interacting with recruits. And on the other hand, you're going to get a lot of comments from people that aren't friendly with what you're doing or happy with what you're doing. But you said it doesn't help you win games. I think it can help you win recruits, though.
Yeah,
and
which ultimately
recruits helps you win games. And I think that's the most important part of it, and I think that's the reason they do it is, you know, high school kids, they've moved on from Facebook. They're already moving on from Twitter, and they're moving on to Snapchat and others. Yeah. And so it's a different world out there, but to interact with high school recruits and show them attention on social media is just as important to young kids as showing them attention when you visit their school that one day. Because if you do it on social media, the whole world and every friend that they have on social media sees the attention you're getting. And so I think it's really smart. And I'm glad they've picked that up. But these guys are young guys. You know, Coach Campbell is, what, 37 years old?
They are.
So they get it. And I think that's the biggest thing that, you know, with a young coaching staff, it's a double-edged sword as well. You have a guy who doesn't have a lot of head coaching experience. But you also have a guy that can relate to players better.
Yeah.
And so much of coaching is relating to your players. And that's why I think you see guys like Tom Herman at Houston doing a good job. You see guys like Mike Tomlin. When he was a head coach in the NFL, he had a player or two older than he was.
Yeah.
But he could relate to them and motivate them. And especially on the recruiting trail, I think these guys have done a great job so far.
Another good Bill Finley story. He said that it was right after Campbell's staff had basically been put together. Bill told me that they showed up at practice one day at the women's practice, and they just wanted to, like, you know, shake hands and you know, say hello and get to know each other. And Bill was like, I kept looking at all these guys, and it's like, man, they got a lot of grad assistants just because they're all so young.
Yeah.
It's cool, though. I like it. It's cool for a younger guy like me because I feel like I can relate to these guys pretty well, and they're full of energy, man, and they are one thing I think we're going to see when Matt Campbell has his press conference tomorrow for the start of spring ball. I think there's going to be a lot of brutal honesty too.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like with the offensive line.
Yeah.
These are offensive line guys, and I guess we can kind of start digging into the team a little bit here. But I want to start there because, you know, I wrote a column last week about how bad I think this line looks on paper.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this from a coach's standpoint. There's not much there. I mean, Jake Campos is out for the spring because of an injury. He had off-season surgery. They lost Daniel Burton in the off-season. He was arguably their best offensive lineman when healthy, but he wasn't healthy that often. I think the last few years has kind of buried him into the ground. We're seeing this a lot of these guys where they, like Jacob Dunning, his career is over. He had to play way too much, way too early because of all the injuries on the offensive line. So my question for you with your coaching experience, there's not a lot there. However, the Campbell staff prides itself on being offensive line oriented. They, you know, Tom Manning, the offensive coordinator, just won that award, like offensive line coach of the year. What can a staff do to coach up guys who probably shouldn't be playing at this point? I mean, what can we expect from a not so talented offensive line?
Well, I mean, if there's any position you can get away with having less talent and make them into a good player, it's probably the offensive line. You know, if you have a roster of defensive backs that run a 4-7 and are slow and short, you can't really do much with it. But with offensive line, so much of it is mental and technique and working together. If they have the intelligence and have at least some tools, I'm not saying you can just throw a 240-pound guy in there and succeed. But if you have guys that have a frame, you can work with that more than you can with a quarterback that can't throw or a wide receiver that can't catch. And so, you know, obviously looking at the depth chart, it doesn't look good right now. But, you know, offensive line, it's a weird position. I mean, Nebraska built their whole program, their whole tradition on walk-on offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes these young guys that haven't had a chance, once they actually get a chance, they'll surprise coaches. And so I would wait till the end of spring to really hammer those guys. But we'll see what happens. happens.
I started hammering them 2 weeks before spring, maybe unfairly.
But it is such a key part of the team. Yeah. I mean, you look at the other positions we're going to talk about, that's the one glaring hole right now that if they can get straightened out. And
that's what scares me, because I think the rest of the offense isn't that bad.
Right.
I have a fear that everything comes together except the offensive line. Now, a couple of Iowa State put out these position outlooks on Cyclones.com, and a couple things stood out to me. Matt Campbell had a quote on Julian Goodjones. Now, he was an Iowa kid who redshirted last year. Campbell's quote is, "Julian Goodjones is a kid that when you talk about the highest ceiling of any player on the football team, he's right there." For a redshirt freshman offensive lineman, man, that was a big quote for me, especially for a guy like Campbell who's obsessed with offensive linemen. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, and you look at him, he's 6'5", 270. He's going to have to gain weight. I mean, you don't want to be playing offensive line at 270, but if he can get up to 285, 290, that's probably where Campos started. I mean, how heavy was he when he first played as a freshman?
I think 285, something like that.
He didn't tear the world apart, but he had a pretty successful first year.
Technique-wise, he was right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Bruns tells me, at least. I don't ever try and analyze offensive linemen. I just go to the big cat, Ben Bruns. And another thing Campbell said about the offensive line, and I think this ties into what you were saying, and I had a conversation with Tom Manning a few weeks ago, and this adds up with that as well, and he said, "You're going to see a million different combinations, a million different guys in and out, and it will be our job to find the right fit." The one thing I think that this staff is going to do fundamentally with an offensive lineman that the other staff did not believe in is they're going to move him around. Tom Manning told me that a guy like Sean Curtis, who's been in the program for 3 springs now, he's been exclusively a tackle. They're trying him at guard. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to try and move these guys around. And so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the scary thing is even if they can find 5 legitimate starters, I mean, how many offensive linemen get hurt during the season?
Exactly.
And so you need more than 5. You need to have probably 7 to 8 guys that can really contribute. And so they have their work cut out for them. They have a couple JUCO guys coming. I can't remember. You would know either this spring or in the fall.
Yeah, the kid Carson Green, who's already here. This is how bad it is. I would guess he's going to be their top option at center at this point, and he's never had a spring at this level.
Yeah.
So we will see. That's the one thing I'm really interested to see, and I don't even know how much we'll learn, but I do know that they kind of like the Campbell quote right there. They're just kind of throwing their hands up, and they're going to see what they can do.
I thought it was a big deal when the kid that originally committed from New Hampshire, I believe.
The Rhode Island kid.
Rhode Island.
And yeah, that was brutal.
You know, he was playing 1AA, but, you know, he's a guy that had played a lot of football and looked like he could really step in and contribute. And when he stepped out, I think that was a big deal.
That was a dagger. And his brother was – did you catch up on
–
it was right during the election. So his brother kept coming on Twitter and, like, he was almost – from an Iowa State fan standpoint, they're watching this brother's tweets – and it was really, you took it as disrespectful. He would, you know, the kid had signed a financial aid agreement with Iowa State, and the kid had, like, Iowa State with his background on Twitter and his, you know, his detailed, it says, like, Iowa State commit, like, proud to be a Cyclone, whatever it said. And then his brother would be like, nope, we're visiting all these other schools and stuff. And there was kind of a bad taste in the fan base's mouth with that. And then he backed out and went to Georgia, but no, he would have started. Like, there's no doubt he would have been. He probably would have started at left tackle, which is the most important position when it comes to protecting your quarterback. So that was a dagger, but nonetheless, you got to move on. So, okay, let's go to Joel Lanning. We saw a lot more of him last year. Loved his gifted runner. I think he's a gifted leader. There's 2 knocks you've had on Lanning his whole career. One is accuracy, and 2, it was that ability to pick up a playbook that, in his defense, he's had multiple playbooks. He's had a lot of quarterback coaches, and now he's got another. So what do you see from Joel Lanning going forward?
I think the number one quality Joel has, he's a competitor and a leader. And of anything you want in a quarterback, that's what you want.
Yeah.
He obviously can run the ball. But I think you hit it on the head. having a new playbook is extremely difficult for a quarterback, but you have all spring to work on it. You know, this year, the difference is he's coming in as the clear number one. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not splitting reps. He's not competing for the starting job this spring. He's going to get all the number one reps, I would guess, this spring. And that gives him just another level of confidence, too, that he is the man this spring. And he's going to have to figure out the playbook because he has weapons around him that – can make him look better. If the offensive line can come around and Mike Warren does a good job running the ball, that takes a lot of pressure off of him. But he has the arm. He just needs to figure out the playbook very quickly. And I think he could have a successful year. I mean, he had some great moments last year. He had some wins that we didn't expect him to have. He didn't expect that win over Texas. And there were other times versus Oklahoma State and TCU where he looked really, really good.
I did a little it was right after Campbell was hired. I talked to Joel, and I never even wrote about it, but we were just shooting the breeze. And I asked him, will you ever slide? I'm like, because that's the one thing I know that the new staff, when they wanted to get a backup because Grant Rohatch left, and they love Lanning. They're like, he's our guy. There's no question. But the way he plays, you've got to have that in the back of your mind. So I'm like, I guess my question for you is, and Lanning's like, no, I'll never slide. It's not my style. I'm not going to do it. Would you rather him do that, or do you like keeping that edge and just letting him go out there and just be a bulldozer?
Yeah, I don't know. I love it until he gets hurt.
Yeah. I mean, until he gets dinged up.
Yeah, and then we're up in cycling reaction, blasting for it. But
and we've got a freshman quarterback playing who doesn't belong out there.
You have to let a guy be himself and be the competitor he is, but you would hope there's a balance that, you know, in the first quarter of a game or in a game you're winning by a couple touchdowns, he would learn that.
But just lower your shoulder against Sean Oakman. Yeah, I love it. That will be interesting to me. I'm anxious to see how they kind of mold Lanning in the future, though. And he said, you know, the accuracy, that was what he was going to focus on all summer. So he's and I know you know him way better than I do, but he's a really hard worker. So I would anticipate you see quite a bit of improvement there from his sophomore season to the junior year. Mike Warren is one of the top returning running backs in all of college football. I don't think that's too big of a statement to make. He led all of freshman running backs last year in yards. There's not a lot of depth behind him. However, I think we proved last year that it doesn't really matter. You can kind of they've got a couple of freshmen, or they've got a freshman coming in. There's that Sheldon Crony kid who was out last year with an injury. Now it sounds like they may be moving him to defense as well. That's going to be something to keep an eye on throughout the spring months. But there's a kid, David Montgomery, I would fully anticipate to play as a true freshman next year, kind of in that Joshua Thomas role. Joshua obviously left the program in the offseason. Montgomery's 5'11", 225. But Warren, man, he's as good as it gets. The only thing I worry about is just when you talk about a bad offensive line and a quarterback that struggles to have accuracy when he throws the football, I just worry about beating him down.
Yeah, and if teams know they can just key on the run and stop the run, he's going to have a harder time. But, I think it is a big deal that Joshua Thomas left. He was a big piece of that puzzle last year.
I agree.
He was the short yardage guy. He scored a lot of touchdowns, and having that depth is crucial. I would say in this day and age in football, running back is becoming more of a commodity than it was in the past. I mean, mm-hmm. you could just plug a lot of guys in and be successful. We've seen teams do that before, that, you know, their star running back goes down, and they plug someone else in, and they're still successful. That being said, Mike Warren is a star. And you don't want him to go down. But if he does, hopefully one or two of those young guys can step up and at least be sufficient if he has any injury problems.
Quick shout-out to A-Plus Lawn and Landscape. They sponsor our spring football coverage at CycloneFanatic.com. I got them working on my yard. I always had, like, the last, like, 4 years. I got the best-looking yard in Bondurant with all their chemicals
Better than
and
Bloom's?
Stuff. Oh, yeah. Bloom's yard sucks compared to mine. It's not even close. A-Plus Lawn and Landscape, they're bringing you spring football coverage this year at CycloneFanatic.com. And, of course, Agrigold here with our new, our video podcast. Of course, you can listen to it on iTunes as well, as many of you are probably doing right now. All right, let's finish up the offense, and we'll go to your position, the wide receivers. No complaints here. I don't think DeVario Montgomery leaving is that big of a deal. They've got enough guys who can do that. And it all starts with Alan Lazard, who the new coaching staff is obsessed with Alan Lazard, and rightfully so. I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with these guys, and it always comes back to you got to get your playmakers the ball. And that will be a focal point. Game one, I guarantee you, is to get that young man the football as many times as possible.
Yeah, you know, that's what I like about some of these younger minds in football, and we talk about the young coaching staff is they grew up, they played and started coaching in the new era of football. Mm-hmm. You know, football changed.
That's a good point.
Even since when I played 12, 13 years ago, it was more run, you know, run the ball, throw the ball a little bit when you need to, but no one was spreading it out like they do now. These guys played in that. That's their mentality now. They understand that you can't just run your typical offense like teams did for, you know, a century. They understand that you have superstars and you have to get them the ball. No matter how you do it, you have to get those guys the ball. And I think bringing that young, fresh perspective in to the offense, I think is going to be big. And I think no one will benefit more than Alan Lazard because he is the guy.
And I think, too, just we don't really know what the offense is going to look like. However, what I'm piecing together, you're going to see fewer times when Iowa State is out there with four wide, right? I think it's going to be more a couple tight ends at some point in time. And to me, like, that'll help Alan too, won't it? Because he's such a big guy, right? You've got that leverage with him. If you pack everything in, I feel like he may be able to go downfield more.
Right. I mean, if you run a two tight end set and there's only two receivers out, most teams will adjust to try to stop that run.
Yeah.
And then you get more one-on-one coverage or, you know, one-on-one with maybe a safety trying to help. And so, yeah, having have a good, big, strong receiver out there, you know, he can succeed in that way too. So no matter the formation or the spot on the field, he's the guy that they're going to look to often, and he's going to have to step up. He's had a very good career so far, but I think his talent, especially in his junior year, he can really take a big step this year and turn into a really great one of the great Iowa State receivers of all time.
Yeah, all this stuff we're talking about, this is why, I mean, I'm obsessed with the offensive line because, man, I think it's there. I have a lot of faith in Joel Lanning. More faith than I probably should based off of what I've seen, but I just know how hard of a worker he is. He's kind of a badass, and I like that. They can shore that up. At tight end is the final position to talk about here. We don't know a lot. However, they do really love this JUCO. Clifford Fernandez is his name. He's already on campus. We don't have an EJ Bibbs in this group. However, when you've combined some of the guys like a Justin Chandler who've already been there, I don't think they're going to ask anybody to be EJ Bibbs. This comes back to one of those conversations that we had earlier, Jack, about you know, with the offensive line where you can kind of do more with less, and they seem excited about this group. I don't know much about them, frankly. If I came on here and told you I knew a ton about Cliff Fernandez, I'd be absolutely.
We saw Justin Chandler a little bit last year.
We did.
But not.
He's the only tight end coming back with a catch,
yeah,
I believe. So I guess we'll just take a wait and see approach with tight end. However, they like this Fernandez. He's 6'3", 255. He had he had some decent offers. JUCO, we'll see. Let's move to the defense. And man, we got bad news today.
Yeah,
it ruined my day. Levi Peters.
It's only 10 o'clock a.m.
I know. Levi Peters is one of my all-time favorite clones, man.
Yeah.
Talk about a genuine of a dude.
Yeah.
As you can find, and it's his career's over. Injuries. We're seeing a lot of this. Luke Knott saw it earlier in the year. That's two of my favorite clones. Two of the greatest kids that you'll see come through Iowa State. That sucks.
And that's where it hurts even more so than, you know, the linebackers already are thin.
Yes.
And you lose both those guys. But even more so on the field, I think what you lose with those guys is what they do off the field. You know, Levi Peters is a great leader.
He's a captain.
He's a captain.
Yeah.
Not because of his play on the field, but because of what he does outside of or off the field. And so that's where it's going to really hurt. And then you look at where it does hurt on the field, and we're already scrambling to find a good linebacker crew, and that certainly doesn't help.
Here's my guess at the starters, and I don't really know the style of defense they're going to play. I mean, they're keeping all this pretty hush-hush. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a 3-4.
Yeah, sounds like they're going to go back to a 4-3.
Yeah, so my guess is Jordan Harris in the middle, Willie Harvey, who I think Willie Harvey can play. he was a little bit undisciplined last year, but that's what you would expect out of a young man. But he's pretty athletic. And then Jay Jones had a nice year. I think he's going to be okay. This Regan Northrup, I think, is pretty good as well. He could compete there at nickel. I mean, you got Brian Mills. Kane Seeley's never really proven that he's a Big 12 linebacker up to this point. Man, I don't know. Like, to me, the linebacking position is a lot like the offensive line on that side of the football, where you just kind of have to wait and see and hope that, you know, you hope that Jordan Harris makes that Jeremiah George type leap from his junior to senior year.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, it's pretty thin pickings there, especially when you lose. Because I got to cross Levi Peters off of my notes here, because yeah, I had no idea about that before we came into play. But what do you think about that, though? Because I liked the 3-4. I wasn't in love with the 3-4, but I liked the 3-4. I liked the reasoning that Rhodes went to it, because we can't recruit defensive linemen very well here. I think that made a lot of sense. But, man, this staff, when they came in, they were pretty quick to close it up.
Yeah, I think it was pretty obvious they wanted to move back to a 4-3 or away from that 3-4. You know, I think two reasons. I liked the 3-4, and I liked at least Rhodes trying it out last year. It is hard to recruit defensive linemen, period, no mm-hmm. matter where you are.
Yeah.
But especially at Iowa State, we've not had the best of luck recruiting defensive linemen, so that's a benefit. But then in the Big 12, when you play teams that's almost up and down the Big 12, spread the field, that can be a defense that does well in that situation. And so I didn't mind that Rhodes tried it, but, you know, if these guys are used to the 4-3, and they, you know, looking at the roster this year, the defensive line looks stronger than the linebackers.
It does.
So going back and putting four defensive linemen in, they'll figure it out.
I actually really like the starters on the defensive line. Here's a crazy quote, insane quote. If you know the history of Iowa State football, like the modern day history of Iowa State football, Matt Campbell says, "I think where I see the most depth, also the most competition, is the interior of our defensive front." When have we ever had a coach come in and say, man, the deep tackle, man, that's our position?
Yeah,
I don't ever remember. I mean, you go back to Curvey
and Leaders and,
yeah,
and James Reed and Harklaw, you know, yeah, twice in the last 20 years, that's been the strength. But, you know, the other thing I'm thinking about running that 4-3 is you'll probably see, especially in Big 12 play, you're going to see a lot of nickel, where you bring in a fifth defensive back.
Yeah.
And so you only are really playing two linebackers, which could be the way to go when you're thin at linebacker.
They're going to have to. That interior defensive line, I mean, DeMond Tucker was – I thought he would be good last year. He was better than, yeah, I thought. I mean, when he was out – like that Iowa game, for instance, he goes out of the game. I mean, it's a total game changer. It completely changed the defense, especially when you're playing the 3-4 and you got that man in the middle like that. But the one thing I did here, I've been doing a little investigating, working the phones. This Bobby Leith, he's on the vintage summer JUCO track, okay, where he comes in the summer and he sucks. He, about game six, game seven, all of a sudden they're like, man, he's, yeah, you know, he's getting his wind. Let's put him on the field. Does some good things towards the end of the year. A couple of birdies tell me if anybody on the team that is – blown them away so far during winter workouts, it's Bobby Leith,
wow,
and the interior defensive line. So that's an incredibly good sign if it holds to be
true. That would be great. And you know what makes linebackers look really good is really good defensive tackles.
Yeah,
and so if you're thin at linebacker, you need those guys to play really well. And Tucker, I think with Tucker, he has to decide if he wants to be an NFL player or if he wants to be a really good college player.
Yeah.
Because he was a really good college player last year. But if he does what he needs to do over the next 6-8 months, he could be an NFL player.
I think so, too.
And it's not about talent. It's more about mindset and competitiveness and going out there and playing hard every single play. And if he does that, we could be talking about him for years to come, just like we were talking about some of those NFL guys earlier in the show.
I think another guy who potentially could do that is Justin Thomas at defensive end. He was incredibly raw last year. I mean, as raw as they come. And he got dinged up, but, you know, I'm hearing a lot of the same about him that I did with Bobby Leith. That's a guy who, when he came in last year, and granted, they got fired, but one member of the Rhodes staff told me that Justin Thomas is the difference between, like, a win or two. They thought,
wow,
that he would eventually – but he got hurt, and he never really was able to develop throughout the year. I'm hoping that we see that guy at defensive end this year for Iowa State. And if he does, he's just body type wise a guy who, you know,
yeah,
an NFL
team. I don't have my stats in front of him, but he's a big guy.
Yeah, he's I don't have his exact height and weight ahead of me either, but he's like 6'4". I mean, he's a big time dude with a big time body. He could, what is he, 6'7"? Okay, thanks, Adam Gray. He's 6'7". So he's got that David Irving, who's playing for the Dallas Cowboys right now. That's my point. Like, when you've got that body type at that position, it really doesn't matter how big of a slacker you are. Mm-hmm. Like, David Irving just coasted through his career at Iowa State. He never did anything, and he's playing in the National Football League right now. So that's why I get excited about a guy like Justin Thomas, especially if he's apparently he's an incredibly good kid, and he does work hard. He couldn't stay healthy last year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a key every year for Iowa State, and it will be the key certainly this year, is can you withstand the injuries you have?
Yeah.
I mean, Iowa State has never, and in the near future, is not going to have a ton of depth. And so it comes down to how many of these guys are getting hurt.
Yeah. Jeez. You're preaching to the choir right there. A couple other notes, defensive line. Vernell Trent in the middle is a guy who I know that they're really zeroing in on. What about Robbie Garcia? What a weird career. He starts his first game as a redshirt freshman, and he got a sack. Like, it was a joke. He should never have been starting. That was the epitome of how bad Iowa State's situation was at defensive line. He gets a sack that first game, and it was like, wow. Well, he's been dinged up. However, he's coming around on his junior year now. They seem to be fairly high on him. When Campbell talks about that competition in the interior line, I think he got four guys. So that's fairly encouraging. And then the rest of the way at defensive end, I don't know. I'm not really crazy about any of these guys, but we'll see. As far as like Gabe Luna, J.D. Wagner, I think Darius White would probably, if you put a gun to my head right now, would be the other starter on the defensive end over Wagner and Luna and those guys, but we'll see. Defensive backs, Jack, Kamari Cottonmoya is a stud. I think he's got NFL written all over him.
Yep.
And I'm fairly excited about the cornerbacks as well. They've got Brian Peavy, who really had a great freshman year. He had like a nose for the ball. I liked he little Jeremy Reeves to him, where it was like, he's small, but the son of a buck will come up and hit you, and that's what I liked.
He has
about
the instincts, and yeah, and Tribune. You know, I remember when they first threw him on the field.
Oh, that Texas
3 years
game.
Ago, Texas game, oh. and it looked like he had no business being out there, and he probably didn't as a true freshman. But he has continued to get better, and even when he's getting burnt or giving up a touchdown, it seems like he's always there. And you know, in this league, you're going to give up touchdowns, but I think he has improved so much over the last 3 years. And coming in, I believe he's going to be a senior this year. I mean, you would expect him to have a really good year, and he's going to have to. You know, in the Big 12. You have to have good cornerbacks, and so having that be a strength is a really good thing.
So they've got between PV and Tribune, and then they've got this Jamal Wiltz, who was there last year, is a JUCO guy. He's probably the third guy, but then another guy to watch is this DeAndre Payne, who is a JUCO, it's important. The difference between a spring and a summer JUCO. I mean, the summer JUCOs, I'm telling you guys, done this long enough, don't count on them. I mean, you can't just like pencil in a summer JUCO and expect them to come in and help. The spring guys, you absolutely can. Between Payne and then this Thad Daniels, who I guess I would probably pencil in as your strong safety for next year. I think that they're pretty excited about what he brings to the table. I like the defensive backs. I do. I just linebacker and offensive lineman, those are my big concerns. You got any other do you agree with that?
No, I think that's right. And the biggest one for me is what you said, the offensive line. I mean, there's enough talent on offense that if they can put a decent line out there, they could have a really good offense.
The one other thing I wanted to talk to you about is just in the recruiting trail a little bit. I wanted to see if you're buying the we're going to be the Midwest option for the Big 12. I guess they're still recruiting Texas. They're still going to recruit Florida. However, if you look at the offers that this staff is putting out, and if you look at their first recruiting class, they really are focusing on the Midwest. I mean, they're starting in Iowa, and they're building themselves out. Can you win in the Big 12 doing that? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think first of all, if you're gonna say that, you have to own the Midwest as far as the Big 12 goes. You can't let the other teams come in and steal the best guys. So you're done. You're signing, you know, that second or third tier out of your home territory, so to speak. You're gonna have to go get some skill guys, you know, from Florida or California or Texas. some of the bigger states, but I do like the connections that this staff have in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan, where there's some good players there. That's why you see a lot of good teams in the MAC that keep those guys home in those schools in the MAC, and they can do well. I mean, where Campbell is coming from at Toledo, they beat Iowa State last year. They beat Arkansas last year. Mm-hmm. So there's talent there, and I think it's going to take a lot of work for them to figure out who is a Big 12 player out of those guys and get them to stay up in the Midwest. But I don't mind the strategy, and you know, there's a lot of good players in Minnesota and Wisconsin. You know, AJ Klein came from Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. if you're always going down to Texas, I've watched this for so long that every once in a while those third tier guys out of Texas, they or Florida, they come up and do well, but you miss on a lot of those guys too. And if you're missing on a lot of these recruits, that's how you have a depth chart that it has big holes in it. And that's how you have programs that can't really get over the hump. And so to me, it's not necessarily about getting all 4 or 5-star guys. It's about how many guys are you missing on. And mm-hmm. if you're missing on a lot of guys and you're constantly refilling it with freshman recruits, you're going to struggle. And so solid guys from the Midwest that can stick around for 4 years and play and contribute are better than a long shot from Texas or Florida.
And then that backfires too, because you have like the Luke Knott situation. You have the Jacob Dunning situation. Luke Knott didn't belong on the field mm-hmm. as a redshirt freshman. Yep. I mean, he had no business being out there. He was too small. He needed to get bigger. Jacob Dunning was the same situation.
Jake Campbell's probably...
You're probably right. Maybe that's the reason he's having surgery right now. So it backfires in that sense, and then you have more attrition down the road because these guys can't finish their careers. I don't know. I do like the young guys in the program. I think the last two classes have been pretty good, even for the road staff. But I still think if you would go through scholarship 1 through 85, what do we have? 60, 65 Big 12 players?
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't done that.
It's hard to win with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Big shout out to my buddy McKinley over at Performance Concrete Polishing. Man, they'll take a turd that is like as far as the concrete goes, and they'll make it beautiful. Jack, I went down to their warehouse. What he can do is he can put take your garage for instance, and he polishes the concrete. And he puts like an Iowa State logo in there.
Oh, nice.
You can do whatever you want.
Like a color or just kind of a
you can, yeah, light? He can do color.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he can do anything you want. Performance Concrete Polishing. Give McKinley a shout out today. All right, before we wrap things up here on the AgriGold sponsored podcast, we got Jack Whitford in with us. You've been watching basketball much?
Yeah, Iowa State basketball.
Yeah, what do you think? Are you what's your take on Prohm?
Oh, I like him. You know, I think the depth this year has been the killer.
It's been brutal.
I mean, we have the starting five that I wouldn't really trade with anyone probably. But, you know, I do like the fact that he is looking long-term and he's not caving into some of the personalities and some of the stuff that's happened. He's trying to set a culture that they're gonna do the right things on and off the court. And so I like that, you know. He's taking a lot of heat that he's not Fred Hoiberg. Well, you know, he's only lost a couple more games than Fred did last year. If you compare wins and losses, he's not that far behind. The only thing that frustrates me is last year they could win the close game. And this year, I mean, I don't know how many games they've lost in overtime or in the last couple minutes, and they got to figure out a way to close. And if they do that, they can make a run.
It's interesting, too, because Hoiberg's teams always seem to win those close games.
Yeah.
And it's like how much of it was luck – how much of it was like a mentality at the top?
Yeah.
You don't really know.
Yeah, maybe it's the Hoiberg swag. They never stop believing, but yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
I think in the long run, you think a lot of that evens out. If you play 10 close games, you're probably going to win 5 and lose 5 over time.
I think we do lose touch on how many really close games that Fred's teams won.
Mm-hmm.
Like that were just down to the wire, and Naz would hit that shot against Oklahoma State.
Just knew they were always going to win. I mean,
yeah,
the Big 12 tournament last year was a perfect example. I mean,
all those games. Yeah, so they get Oklahoma on Thursday night at 8:00.
How about that tournament? In the quarterfinals, you're playing. I don't know what Oklahoma's ranked now, but it was number one at one point.
Yeah, they're probably top 10. I don't know what the poll is today. I don't think it's come out at this point.
So to win the tournament, they'd probably have to beat Oklahoma.
You have to beat two
West
top
Virginia,
10 teams.
And Kansas.
Three top 10 teams. Yeah, that's insane. That's
fun,
incredible.
Though. I mean,
well, yeah,
you're going to be there.
Absolutely. I don't know. Like, I don't mind the matchup against Oklahoma. I feel like they're going to lose. I don't know why. I have this, like, bad feeling that we're going home in one day.
You know,
who knows? I feel like they're going to lose, but then they'll do well in the NCAAs. That's what I think.
And that's where I was going to go is, like, okay, you have a great tournament. You win three games, and you get a trophy, which is great. I mean,
yeah,
we want that. But then you're dead tired going into the first round like we did last year and lose to whoever the heck that was.
UAB.
UAB. And
words never to be mentioned, you know, on the podcast again.
So I don't know if I'd rather have the Big 12 title and lose to UAB in the first round or lose first game and make a run.
I would
legitimate
rather
run.
Lose the first game and make a run. I don't know. I wanted West Virginia again so bad, though, because I still, like, I'm not sold that they're that good.
Yeah.
I think they just – that style of play. And in the Big 12, like, regular season, like, the refs kind of just let them get away with it. And I don't think that happens. It
seems like every time you play West Virginia, it's are the refs going to call it close or not?
Yeah.
If they let West Virginia have a little – if they let them have a little leeway on the fouls, they're just all over you the whole game.
I think that last game at West Virginia was just a travesty.
Yeah.
Like, how – there's no way – that Iowa State and those guys fouled more than West Virginia.
Right.
Come on. Like, I mean, I'm not like
but like all of West Virginia fouls are like so close that they don't know whether to call it or not. And so,
yeah. Well, at one point in the year, and I don't know if it still holds true, but at one point in the year, West Virginia fouled more than any other team in the country. And Iowa State fouled the least. There's like 300 teams, man. And you're going to tell me when they get together two times that Iowa State fouled more than West Virginia? There's no way.
The magic of Bob Huggins.
Oh, man. He's a scary, scary man.
But I can't wait for that Big 12 tournament.
Are you going to come down to KC or you got Senate business?
Senate business this weekend, but
all right.
Maybe if they're in the title game.
All right. Well, that'd be good. It'd be good to see you down there. Thanks, man. It's good to have you in here today.
Thanks for having me, yeah. Appreciate it.
Jack Woodford in here today. Thanks to our friends at AgriGold, if you've been watching. I hope we didn't make your stomach turn or anything like that. Well, this will be nice and fancy at some point too, I promise. We'll do this up right. AgriGold bringing us the podcast today. All of our spring football coverage, which starts tomorrow, brought to you by A+ Lawn and Landscape. He's Jack Whitford. I'm Chris Williams. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening.